integrity in each of the services is also critical to a strong military. General Amos, I have become friends with Major James Wyrick, United States Marine Corps, who I sincerely believe is a man of integrity. Did you fear Major Wyrick at any point?
My name is James Wyrick, and this is Military Justice, my podcast about the system of justice that governs those who protect our nation. Welcome back to Military Justice. Thanks for being here again. Today we're joined by David P. Sheldon, who's a civilian attorney, former naval officer and attorney, who's representing Special Warfare Operator Senior Chief Kenneth E. Barry. Senior Chief Barry is a SEAL. He was convicted of sexual assault. His convening authority, that commanding admiral, didn't believe that Chief Barry had actually committed the crime, was going to disapprove the findings in that court-martial, but as the judge recently determined, that action was interfered with by the highest-ranking lawyer in the Navy. That's Vice Admiral Crawford. This is really an important case to discuss. I'm really happy that Mr. Sheldon was on with us today. I mean, this goes to the heart of some of the problems that we have going on in the military justice system at the moment. Specifically, that we have outside pressures, mostly from Congress, that are influencing the outcomes of trials. And I don't say that in a disparaging way for Congress. I mean, Congress created the UCMJ. They can do anything they want with it. It's theirs. We are only implementing what they create. But there are a number of individuals, and as we see in this case, the highest ranking lawyer in the Navy, who are willing to sidestep due process to appease Congress in order that the UCMJ is not changed. So with no further ado, we're going to get into the discussion with Mr. Sheldon. But that's just a little backdrop for why some of this may have occurred. Thank you. Well, we're fortunate today to be joined by David Sheldon, who is representing the Navy SEAL that we're talking about today. Mr. Sheldon, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. And thanks for having me on board.
Oh, I appreciate it. So on board, that means that you were in the sea services at one time, correct?
I was. I served on active duty in the Navy from roughly 1990 to 1994. I spent all of my time in appellate defense here in Washington, D.C. at the Navy Yard, building 111, I think. Then I went to a private law firm, Feldman Tucker. I became a partner in that firm after a couple of years. And in 2001, I started my own firm. And since that time, I've been practicing military law with various people, both associated with my firm and those who I've just been able to work with throughout the years. It's been great.
I really enjoyed spending a number of years. I was in appellate government. So that was a good tour.
Yeah, we always had a good back and forth with appellate government. Back then, General Hess was the head of appellate government.
Right.
And with Captain Abbott and Commander Young and then Captain Young, we had a good team, and it was a good back and forth between appellate defense and appellate government.
Yeah, it's a little strange, or not strange, it's good, in the sense that when you don't have as many live clients and there's not that bickering of trial court, we were really collegial. I mean, we would play sports against each other, and we definitely got along well. Before we talk about, obviously, the underlying issue of unlawful command influence by the JAG, tell me about your client.
Well, he's a Navy SEAL, SOCS Barry, served in combat several different times. He's decorated. He maintains and has maintained his innocence the entire time. And obviously, he's out of confinement now. He served 3 years in confinement. And we're waiting on the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces to rule on the case. We expect that there's going to be a briefing order come down very shortly, and then briefing will take place. Barry is living on the West Coast. I think he's been buoyed by the amount of support that he's received, both from his friends and from his fellow shipmates. You know, he wants this nightmare to be over as soon as possible.
So how long had he served in the Navy?
I believe that he was going on 18 years.
Yeah. Wow. And what we know now, that had we not had interference from the highest-ranking lawyers in the Navy, he wouldn't have served any of those 3 years, right?
That's right. That's right. He basically, it was Admiral Lorge's position that he should not approve the findings and sentence because he had very serious reservations about the fairness of the trial and about whether or not he believed, in fact, that Senior Chief Barry was not guilty and that he was wrongfully convicted by the military judge. Commander Peyton O'Brien. He was the fact finder, and he had also very, very real concerns about her judicial restraint, about her judicial decorum, and about whether or not she afforded Senior Chief Barry a fair trial. It was his opinion, not speaking for the Admiral, but certainly he voiced these concerns both after reading the record of trial and recently on the stand here in Washington, D.C. last month, or rather it was the end of September, I guess.
Yeah, and to just give some background, so the Admiral is the convening authority, and for decades upon decades, I know it's changed recently, but decades and decades, you have case law saying the last best resort for clemency, matters of clemency, lies with the convening authority. And those convening authorities historically had that responsibility to, by law, they couldn't approve a case that they didn't believe was factually correct.
That is correct. And then obviously Congress changed the law. And this case was really in at the very end when convening authorities had the power to disapprove findings of guilty. That has now been taken away by Congress, among other restrictions that they've placed as a result of their political influence. But I really think that this was, I don't think that this rests with Lorge. I think Lorge wanted to do the right thing. I think he was deeply troubled at the time. I think his lawyers, Captain Jones, and I suppose if you want to say Admiral Crawford was his lawyer, he shouldn't have. Admiral
right.
Crawford, the Judge Spath found that Admiral Crawford did provide legal advice to Admiral Lorge, and that advice amounted to unlawful command influence. And I think that is telling, and it's very, very significant that here we have really the head lawyer for the Navy committing unlawful command influence, not just once, but at least twice. That has to concern everyone. Equally as concerning is Captain Jones's actions at the time, where he, number one, provided at several different times inaccurate and incorrect legal advice blatantly incorrect legal advice. He also attempted to devise a fix to address Admiral Lorge's concerns, which is also deeply troubling. And there was some element of connection between Captain Jones and Admiral Crawford. Apparently, Crawford was a mentor to Captain Jones. But really, the real trouble here, and what is so disconcerting, is the fact that the lawyers committed the unlawful command influence. And that is something I don't think we've seen as much, but certainly we saw it at the highest levels of the Navy here.
Yeah, and the lawyers had always, we were supposed to be there as the bulwark against, I mean, we were there to advise the non-lawyer commanders, and it seems like not only did they fail in that duty, but they actually went in the other direction.
Oh, that is, in fact, the case. It's not just a matter of providing bad legal advice. This is Malamin say, if you ask me. This is evil in and of itself, because they knew what they were doing. And Admiral Crawford should not have been discussing a pending legal matter at the time. It was in his lane. He was not responsible. And he, as Judge Spath ruled or found in his findings of fact, that he committed unlawful command influence. That's very, very disturbing. He also found, and it, by way of omission, he found that Admiral Crawford was not credible.
Yeah, let's dive into this, because, I mean, I've read about this, but you were actually there and a participant. What was it like having the Navy JAG on the stand?
Well, certainly the courtroom was packed, I'll tell you that much.
Right.
There were civilians and uniformed personnel, and Admiral Crawford was, I believe, the first up, and he testified for well over an hour to 2 hours, I believe. I don't think it went longer than that. Judge Spath found that Admiral Durenzi and Commander Dowling.
For the listeners, Durenzi was the JAG just before Crawford. He was her subordinate, and then he moves up and takes over her job.
That's right. And Judge Spath found that Admiral Durenzi was quite credible. And I tell you, she was very impressive on the stand. She did not dodge one question. She answered every question candidly, and it was obvious that she was answering truthful. She basically said, you know, when I was JAG, it was not in my lane to provide legal advice to convening authorities, and I never would have done what Admiral Crawford was alleged to have done. She did speak with Admiral Lorge about her activities on the Hill and at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue with the president. And to some extent, Judge Spath felt that also may have constituted unlawful command influence. And I would say almost in an inadvertent way, because I think, you know, obviously she was discussing the pending matters that she was dealing with. But I think it reinforces how much and how careful lawyers have to be when they're discussing matters, and particularly when they're in leadership, as opposed to Admiral Crawford. Crawford denied outright that he discussed or provided any legal advice on the Barry case.
And he didn't give a I cannot recall?
He had a few I cannot recalls. He also had some more emphatic, no, I didn't do that. To the extent that Judge Spath found him not credible, obviously I think that must factor into all of this. And it's got to be deeply concerning. I mean, one has to have severe amnesia if, in fact, he can't remember this, because pretty much everybody else did have a very, very distinct memory. And I contrast Admiral Crawford's testimony with Admiral Durenzi. Admiral Durenzi recalled very specifically her conversations with Admiral Lorge. And I'm talking about their pleasantries, asking about, I believe, Admiral Durenzi's mother, discussing other matters. And that, in contrast to Admiral Crawford, who was very much having problems with amnesia, and what he did recall, he said, did not extend to any type of legal advice or discussing the very case. And the facts simply don't support that at all. Admiral Lorge had wanted to discuss the Berry case, and because of Crawford and his relationship previously, the right answer and the only answer that should have been given is, no, I can't discuss that. Dowling, Lieutenant Commander Dowling, who was then the Deputy SJA for the command, had a conversation contemporaneously with Admiral Lorge several days later. It may have been several weeks later, but where Admiral Lorge had told Dowling, Jim told me I shouldn't put a target on my back. That's very specific recollection. Now, Admiral Lorge couldn't remember if those precise words had been said, but he certainly felt like he was getting advice from Admiral Crawford not to approve the findings and sentence, and that because of the political pressure and the political consequences of that action, it would cause the Navy very, very deep problems with Congress and with the White House. So it really, I think that when you look at how this case and how this developed, it was Dowling and several other lieutenants who brought this issue forth. And had they not done that, unfortunately, I believe that Chief Berry would have never, ever known what had happened and never known of the unlawful command influence. And not to speak poorly of your previous job or the individuals who are now serving in appellate government, but I think it bears mentioning that appellate government knew about this. Appellate government knew about this, and they never alerted appellate defense or myself while the case was pending on appeal. And that's deeply troubling as well.
That is. And I want to flesh something out for the listeners. So we understand there's the command, Admiral Lorge. He has his own in-house lawyer, his SJA. So you have the Navy's, the judge advocate of the Navy, who is the top lawyer. That is just the top lawyer within the military, not necessarily somebody that goes out and gives legal advice to all the various commands. And I just want to point out for the listener that is just another lawyer, but it's like having a treating physician. You don't just, bebop around and then, give medical advice, to numerous patients. It is clear that it's only supposed to be the SJA for the command who is supposed to advise the command.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the reason that you have those lanes is to keep advice and to keep interests separate. So those lanes are very, very purposeful. And there's an MOU that was developed, I believe under Admiral Durenzi, that definitively establishes which lane the Judge Advocate General of the Navy sits in and which lane the SJAs sit in who advise convening authorities. And in essence, what you have is the Admiral for the Navy giving and really unlawfully influencing the outcome of a pending criminal matter. And I just want to say this is not a unique situation. We have evidence in another case that's currently in California where apparently Admiral Crawford is attempt to have a Marine tried by federal authorities. evidence to that extent. And again, one has to wonder what's happened. Why is this being permitted to continue? Why is Admiral Crawford still in the position that he is? Because frankly, it would seem like to be that Judge Staff, in finding that he was not credible, and with the situation as he found that Admiral Crawford committed unlawful command influence, and he's a lawyer, as you said.
Right, right.
The individuals who are supposed to be advising what the law is. I have not acted in any way which would disqualify me in this case. Well, number one, he shouldn't have had any role in the case. And number two, what he did was unlawful. It was not legal. And I think that that says volumes about Admiral Crawford.
I think it's fair to say we know why Crawford's doing what he did, because the military has come under congressional scrutiny for how they handle sexual assault cases, and which is probably useful. But the idea that you fix that by depriving individuals of their legal rights is it's unconscionable.
It really is. And, you know, let me just say that both with Captain Jones and with Admiral Crawford, they were pending nominations and confirmation by Congress for their next ranks. So that was right occurring while all of this went down.
So, Admiral Crawford had the package for him to pin on his third star was pending probably before the Senate Armed Services Committee as this was occurring.
It was right at the same time, and so was Captain Jones. Equally as troubling, and I want to make sure that we cover this, is, you know, after this order came down from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces to hold a debate hearing, the head of appellate defense assigned two additional naval officers, Brian Miser and Rich Federico, both of whom are reservists who are attached to appellate defense, and then Lieutenant Jake Muche to assist me. And let me say that those attorneys have provided outstanding legal advice.
Oh, I know Miser personally. He's a great, great lawyer in person.
They have worked just incredibly hard to make sure that Chief Barry is represented to the nth degree and have done an outstanding job. My point, however, is that these lawyers were assigned in early June. We proceeded to send out discovery requests. We proceeded to begin interviews. And in late July, we scheduled an interview at the Pentagon with Admiral Crawford. And we interviewed Admiral Crawford in his spaces. After that interview, the following day, Navy Appellate Government decided to question the validity of assigning appellate defense counsel to the team. And in fact, they moved to, in essence, disqualify and fire the defense team, all of the Navy lawyers. Now, mind you, previously, both appellate government and appellate defense attorneys had served on Dubay hearings. And the question is whether or not that's allowed for. Of course, under the JAGMAN, Navy appellate defense attorneys or appellate government attorneys cannot be IMC'd for trial. A debate hearing is not a trial. It is a hearing that is a manifestation of the appeals process, and it is a creation of the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. And in fact, the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces had ordered this debate hearing. So it was keeping with tradition to assign these very experienced and very good attorneys to the defense team. it's not a coincidence that the day after that we interviewed Admiral Crawford, that suddenly the Navy starts and the appellate government start to question the propriety of that. And again, we ended up raising another motion on unlawful command influence, and the judge made findings of fact on that score as well. And I think that what you see here is a very, very concerted effort by the Navy throughout this case to deny Chief Barry his rights. And one has to question why. Nothing is worth that. Nothing in our society, in our judicial system is worth that. If we're going to throw out the rule of law, that's really what occurred here. That's what occurred here, is Admiral Crawford disregarded the law, and he acted unlawfully. And the Navy has not, this is not a a bright and shining day for the Navy, let me say that. I think it's very disappointing. That said, I want to say that appellate defense and the appellate attorneys, the attorneys who have represented Chief Barry, including his civilian attorneys, Terry Zimmerman and John Shelburne, as well as...
Shelburne was my NJS instructor.
Right, right. And Lieutenant O'Brien also represented Barry ably, as well as Lieutenant Colin McMahon. All of these individuals have tried very, very hard to represent Barry. But the government, as we know, holds many, many of the levers. And here, those levers were not appropriately balanced. What happened was wrong, and it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed now, whether that's the Court of Appeals or the Navy itself. Chief Barry deserves to have the findings and sentence set aside. He deserves to have his complete rank. He deserves to have his back pay and allowances because he has been wrongly convicted.
Yeah, and I'll circle back to something for a moment. So when you say a Dubay hearing, what we're talking about is an appellate court that has a question that they need answered, a factual question. So they send the case back for a hearing, back to one of the trial judges, to answer a question. And it can, these are very routine. Their Dubay hearings are ordered every week, you know, in, at the appellate courts. So then for the most part, at that time, the accused will not have the trial attorney. His or her trial attorney has moved on years before when the actual court martial occurred. So that's what we did, you know, that the appellate defense would assign an attorney or more than one attorney if they chose to represent that individual at their Dubay hearing. And like you're saying, the idea that they would. And if I recall, it was pretty much kind of the 11th hour when they were removed from the case, wasn't it?
That's right. Well, what the Navy tried to do was basically replace them. And the most senior attorney that could have represented Barry, who was attached to the defense bases here in Washington, was serving over in Europe. And... beyond that, there wasn't a lot of experience that was left in the trial defense shop here in Washington at that time. And so basically what it appeared to be is that they were firing some very, very experienced defense attorneys and trying to substitute them for some green ones or one that wasn't really available to represent Barry. And again, it's another step where the Navy really took the wrong path here.
Well, and I can say, I've had a case against Brian Meiser. I definitely wouldn't want him on the other side, and I didn't at the time, but that's no excuse for violating the law to try to tip that. You know, we don't allow the thumbs on the scale of justice.
Well, we're not supposed to.
Right.
Your Admiral.
And this is, I try to convey to the... to the listener, I was talking to a colleague recently, and we were talking about being, you know, lieutenants. And if you would have told us back then that the Navy JAG would have been found to have committed UCI and lied on the stand, I don't know that that could have even registered in our minds. I mean, really, that you're just, I don't think I could have believed that that was the case.
Well, it's a shocker. That much is true.
Yeah.
I think it's a sign of the times. I think that it's, you know, one of the things that was really influencing this case was, frankly, Senator Gillibrand. And I think we have to start taking a hard look at the propriety of senators as well as members of the executive branch. And I guess we now have to include the lawyers who are supposed to know better in that category of people who are very much endangering this system of justice. The military justice system, frankly, I think is actually pretty damn good when it comes down to it, if the law and the rules are followed. The problem is when you have senators like Gillibrand who reached down in the Berry case and had made inquiries. And one of the things that the lawyers were concerned about, so much so that after Admiral Lorge took his action, there was meetings with the PAO, and they were attempting to basically come up with justifications for the decision that Admiral Lorge did make, because they were afraid that Senator Gillibrand was going to go hard to right on them. And in the course of that, what was relayed was that by Captain Jones to the PAO was, well, the reason that he took that step was basically we made it a fix. He could, you know, put this unusual language in his action, and that the appellate courts would sort it out and do right by Barry. But it wasn't up to Admiral Lorge. And then,
which is, I mean, couldn't be more contrary to the law. I mean, it absolutely was his duty to only go forward on a case that he believed was correct in fact.
That's right. And Admiral Lorge had told the PAO herself that he did not believe that Barry was guilty. And he had great, great reservations. And these are contemporaneous conversations. This is not after-the-fact justification for something that somebody felt badly over. This was at the time. And frankly, I really think if the JAG, the ethics panel, does not investigate this, if state bar...
Here's the question. Let me stop you for 1 second. Here's the problem with that is, who is the ethics panel for the Navy JAG? He's it.
Well, that is the problem.
You know what I mean? I think that that's something that we need to look into is, he is the ethics. He is the head of it. There's no DOD wide. It only is stovepipe by the services. So the idea that he's going to be the ethical investigator of himself?
You raise a good point, and I think that it bears noting that Commander Dowling, who tried to address this, had approached the ethics code was basically told, hey, we're not going to give you any advice. That's beyond what we're going to do here. And you have to wonder whether or not there were some shenanigans there.
Oh, yeah. You're right, because the code means the office. So she goes and asks for advice there, and they say, we can't give you advice, because in effect, they are working directly for the JAG. So that they can just avoid even looking into the matter, because they're really just functionaries of Admiral Crawford.
Well, yep, that's right.
It's just an unthinkable fix we're in, where you have the person responsible for doing the policing of ethics is the one violating them.
I certainly agree with that. I certainly that. And I think that this has not sorted itself out completely. I hope that Keith Barry is restored quickly. Certainly he deserves to be restored and to have all of his rights reinstated. There was a case that came down, I believe it was yesterday, where the Court of Criminal Appeals ruled that there was unlawful command influence and that the proper remedy was dismissal with prejudice. And
yes, that was the Chamblin case. And I agree that, that's really the only way you could even begin to cure what happened to Chief Barry. I mean, I know that doesn't give him his time, you know, the 3 years out of his life. But I think dismissal with prejudice is the only remedy that's really could begin to compensate this.
I think that's right. If the public is to have any confidence in the fairness of the military justice system, the answer here is dismissal of the charges and specifications with prejudice. That's exactly what the court concluded in that case, and it's what should happen in the Barry case. And mind you, again, Navy appellate government tried, when we first raised this issue, to kind of sweep it under the table and say, well, you know, this is, they're right. They deserve to have a new action. No, we do not deserve to have a new action. We deserve to have the charges and specifications dismissed with prejudice.
Yeah, that's kind of disappointing that they did that. So tell me, where are we in? So the case first went up trial level, and that's in 2014, I think he was the original conviction. The convening authority wanted at that time to disapprove the findings, but he ended up approving them because of the unlawful pressure. So then it goes up to Navy and Marine Corps Court of Criminal Appeals. And now it went up to CAF, our highest court, as you know, that is all civilian. And so CAF ordered the Dubé hearing, and that occurred not too long ago. What's the status of the case right now?
The Judge Pfaff issued his findings of fact, and he made some conclusions of law. And those were forwarded up to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, along with the record of trial. And I actually was down at the court yesterday, and I wanted to check something in the record, and I went by and looked at the record, and actually it was there were yellow tabs on the Dubé transcript already. So obviously it has their attention, and people are looking at it right now. I think the question is, I mean, I presume that the Court of Appeals is going to issue an order giving a briefing schedule. I'm a little surprised that an order hasn't came down
right
yet. I'm a little surprised, and it may be that we are going to have an opinion shortly. I don't know. I anticipated that we would get an order, and I still think that we will, but you don't know.
Yeah, I would have expected that you would have had a briefing order and then even possibly oral argument.
Right, right. I think that that's what we have been expecting.
Hmm. Well, you've been so gracious with your time today. I hope if it hasn't been too painful, I might ask you to come back on the show after we have a resolution in this case and see what the Court of Appeals does. Because I'll tell you, that's the fascinating portion for, you know, kind of me is doing my time at appellate government. You kind of get fascinated with the appellate process. But I'd really like to have you back on if you could sometime.
Well, certainly, and I appreciate the opportunity to address this. The Barry case is, you know, just another one of the now many cases that it seems like every branch of the armed forces and even the Coast Guard have had unlawful command influence cases. of recent, whether it's the Marines with the heritage briefing of General Amos, or the Berry case, or the Boyce case for the Air Force, every branch has had it. And UCI is, you know, said to be a cancer. And certainly it seems that in this case it is insidious, and the right answer is to send a very, very forceful message to the services that UCI will not be permitted. And the truth is nobody can, you know, restore Chief Berry. Nobody can give him those 3 years back. Nobody. And not only should he be restored as a matter of his professional and personal life, but I think something else has to occur here. I think that there should be consequences. There should be consequences to the lawyers who were sworn to uphold the law and those who did not and who acted in contravention of the law. I think that the penalty should be harsh, and I think it should be exact. And I'm hoping that this doesn't simply end with a dismissal with prejudice for Chief Berry. I hope that there's an accounting by Navy leadership for what happened, because to have Admiral Crawford continue to serve as a JAG under these circumstances is really an affront to everything that the military justice system is about. If a trial lawyer would have done what happened in this case, there would have been consequences. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, absolutely.
The fact that the command lawyer, the SJA, the fact that the head of the JAG Corps, the head, the very top lawyer in the JAG Corps, committed unlawful command influence, and Judge Staff found that he was not credible, it speaks volumes about the Navy and about the military justice system if consequences are not exacted and these lawyers are not held accountable. They need to be held accountable.
Well, and I think that also, that inside the beltway thinking that is probably part of the problem of this is that they want, okay, well, the next time we report to Congress, we want to say that we have a 78% conviction rate instead of a 77. But they forget that those are humans. Those are people. Those are Chief Berries that your illegal acts are impacting, you know, where they just see it as a big sea of numbers.
Yep. And obviously, it's not just Berry. There's other cases. And, you know, Chambliss was right in keeping with what's been occurring. And we have to get a handle on this. And we have to really make sure that Congress, in addition to the executive branch, is held in check when it comes to UCI. Because, as we know in the Berry case, Senator Gillibrand was in part a factor and an influence in this case, in Berry's case.
Well, yeah, and we had that in the Bergdahl case when Senator McCain said, if there's no punishment in this case, I'll be holding hearings.
Right.
That is just derailing a system of justice.
It is. I mean, equally troubling is Trump's comments regarding Judge Nance. And anyone who's practiced before Judge Nance knows that he's a very, very good judge. He's principled. And for the President of the United States to say what he did, you know, it really does make you wonder about what's happening in this country. The rule of law is very much in jeopardy when things like this are happening.
Well, not while there's people like you out there still looking out for it.
Well, I appreciate that. I do want to say one thing, and that is Chief Berry is an outstanding individual. He's a great shipmate, and the defense team in this case has been, you know, frankly, the best lawyers that I've had the occasion to work with. Commander Miser, Commander Federico, and Lieutenant Commander Muish have all done an outstanding job.
Right. I agree with that. And if there's one bright side to all this, one of my mentors, a guest that I've had on the show, retired Marine Colonel Jane Siegel. She was roommates with Admiral Dorenzi back at Naval Justice School. So she will be happy to know that your report that how frank and open and honest Admiral Dorenzi was.
Well, you know, I knew Admiral Dorenzi when I was on active duty. We served together at Appellate Defense, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for her. I think that she didn't pull any punches, and she laid it out. And had Admiral Crawford had the principle that Admiral Dorenzi certainly conveyed on the stand, you know, we wouldn't be here today. Senior Chief Barry would not have served 3 years wrongfully in jail. How much is that worth? How much is it worth? And what should the proper consequences for Admiral Crawford in this circumstance, and frankly, his mentee, Captain Jones? Those two lawyers need to be held accountable for what happened. And what happened was wrong, and hopefully this system of justice will change it. And hopefully right will be done.
Well, again, thank you. Military Justice is a production of Long Arc Digital Media. There are numerous people that need to be thanked for making Military Justice possible. First of all, audio. Those are the people that clean up all the mistakes I made. Hannah McCarthy, she takes care of that. Methil Talhan, she takes care of everything. And as always, Uber producer Dreadnought has my six.